Welcome to episode 14 of the Just Keep Spinning podcast. This is Andrea, and Andrew's here, but he's not on the mic. So, yeah, maybe you might have heard him over there. But we have a special guest today. We have MB Alexander, three of the five. Say hi, guys.
Hey. Hello, hello.
Hi.
So go ahead and introduce yourselves individually.
Hey, I'm MB Alexander, Michael Alexander, also known as MB Alexander.
Yeah, I'm Austin Harshman.
And I'm Jorge Valdez.
Thanks, guys, for coming through. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
So we're here at Palabras Bookstore. Rosie's really cool. She let us come through and record here. So thank it's kind of like the second home of the podcast in a sense. And really quick, guys, is there any social media handles you want to give out where people can follow you?
Yeah, you could follow us on Instagram. It's just at MB Alexander, E-M-B-Y Alexander. Facebook's pretty good. We just did a new music video. Follow us on YouTube. We've got a bunch of music videos from the past, too, but we just did a new one for the new single. Follow us on all that.
Yeah, so go ahead, and we'll also make a post on our Instagram, Just Keep Spinning Podcast. So if you, for some reason, you can't find it, if you're following us, you'll be able to find it. So,
cool.
Just really quick, there's one event I want to highlight this week. So I always talk about it. It's Loose Joints, DJ Coco, Santos, and Julian on September 14th are going to be playing at Valley Bar. So it's soul, funk, and disco. And it's actually, I believe, yeah, it is at Valley Bar. Sorry, I was just like, hold on. It's 21 and over, and it's a $3 donation this time, but it goes to a good cause. So it's always good to support stuff. So do you guys have anything coming up?
I think the next show back is September 30th at Yucca Tap Room. We're playing with our friends, the Fibs. They're from Fort Worth, Texas. We played with them on the road on our tour in Chicago. So it's kind of that we were both away from home on that show. So now they're coming here for our home.
Awesome. So it's always good to support local bands and all the local scene that's happening here. Mm-hmm. So I know you guys just got back from tour, so we're going to touch on that.
Cool.
But just really quick, I just want to get into just a brief history of the band. So when did the band start?
I think five-ish years ago. Seven is five.
It goes like quick, right?
Yeah, I was 20 when we joined.
Wow.
So was I.
We mostly met in college. Some of us made it through. Some of us are dropouts. we learned a lot there, but we're doing it on our own. And we've been set free and doing it in the real world.
In the wild.
My air quotes. For the people who can't see us.
So I'm sure you guys learned tons along the way, and there's been changes and things like that. So I guess my big question would be, because when I was reading up like on the group and stuff like that, because I always try to be prepared.
Mm-hmm.
So I did notice that I know you, Michael, are actually from here, correct?
Yes.
And are you two from here as well?
Mm-hmm.
Like born and raised and everything?
I live in Seattle right now. But I used to live here, so that's how I know the band. But I'm originally from Florida, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool, because then it's like a mixture. Okay.
Yes.
See, I didn't know that. So how do you feel about Phoenix? Like, well, how old were you when you moved here?
I got here when I was 13, and it was very difficult to get used to from the humidity of Florida. Even though it's hot, it's totally different. But I really like it now. Now that I'm living in Seattle, I really miss the weather here. And
do you miss the dryness?
I miss the desert a little bit. Like the city, I live at downtown right now in Seattle. The city is way it's too easy to get to things. Like it almost makes you too lazy. Yeah. I don't know.
Too convenient.
I need to drive 40 minutes to get somewhere.
It's motivating.
Anywhere I want.
Oh my gosh.
I've lived in Phoenix my whole life. I was born in Mesa, and now I'm over in Surprise, and so.
Oh, okay.
Desert boy.
Yeah. And Michael, do you live like actually in Phoenix right now?
Yeah, I live right there, 16th Street.
Oh, you're like, I could throw a rock and hit my house.
Yes, I could.
He can. Cool. I've seen his arm. He throws really far.
Yeah, right now, well, we used to stay like near the state fairgrounds, and we recently moved a few months ago to Avondale. So for us, it's a big change out
Avondale.
There. it's a completely different, you know, vibe out there. Mm-hmm. Not yeah. not in a negative way, just different lifestyles.
No, it's negative. It's admit it. Avondale's a terrible place.
So had to move, you know, we actually have a daughter, so that's where we're like, okay, we got to move out there for her. Okay. So,
You're forgiven for living
yes,
in Avondale.
Yes, I'm forgiven. I have reasons. So how do you feel from when the band first formed to now, like the difference in, I guess, when you guys were first starting, how was the reception to you? Because the style of music, because I feel like Phoenix gets pigeonholed a lot, where people just don't really understand actually what goes on here.
And yeah. Mm.
So has there been like big changes that you've noticed, like in your crowd or anything like that?
I think from touring a lot, you start to... Because I've lived here in Phoenix all my life, you don't know what's normal and what's not normal until you experience other places. So having toured a lot, I appreciate Phoenix more than I did growing up of how diverse it is. Like there, I think part of it is there's no, it's not a big money machine like LA or something where everything is very commercially driven here. It's a lot of house shows and... Not so much now, but it used to be like desert shows and just kind of like people making art for art's sake. And I think it's very liberating that there's, if you're not chasing the money machine, like just very weird stuff happens in the in-between nooks and the weird spaces.
Yeah, because like one of the things that, I mean, I like to just read anything almost. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I've read in the past too was, and I kind of, you had brought it up in a different interview, was that a lot of people feel like they need to leave here to actually make art, but yeah. It's like you can stay here and make art. And yeah. Then I saw an artist too once say that once they notice like people move from here and they move elsewhere, whether like bigger market like Chicago, New York, LA or whatever, yeah. That they actually sometimes even stop making art because they get so consumed in just being out there. Not
totally. Creating. Yes. Mm-hmm. The freedom of being like just it's kind of it's bad for art here in lots of ways. And that's what makes it good, because then if you're still doing it, you're not doing it for, I don't want to say the wrong reasons. I don't think there's anything wrong with trying to get a paycheck if that's what you're into. I'm just not into that. And when everybody's chasing the same thing, then I think everybody starts making the same art. And you have to play the clubs, and the clubs are kind of the filter to let... You have to be a certain kind of sound to make it in there. You couldn't do, like, a noise set at, like, a nice club, quote-unquote, a nice club. You couldn't do something just terrible, thrashy noise. But here, you can do that, and that's cool.
You can kind of, like... Do you guys feel the same way? Like, you can have a little bit more freedom... Like, since you guys have traveled around to other cities and stuff, like, here, kind of doing your thing?
Yeah. I mean, we're always trying to find that pocket in whatever city we go to is the pocket that fosters that. I think every city has that little underground weird, you know, I always say, like, the trunk space of blank is always my kind of threshold. Like, we want to play the trunk space of Dallas. We want to play the trunk space of Louisiana or whatever. We just, I think, foster it more than we even realize. It's our default is just, like, weird in between niche, do your own thing. And I think other places you have to try harder to find it. I think it's I'm very appreciative of the weird little, like this bookstore is is like,
it's a unique space.
Yeah. And I think cool. When you live in Phoenix, you don't appreciate it. So
in a lot of big cities, it's like really hard to plug in like unique styles of art because there's a lot that's expected. I mean, even a city like Seattle, there's only so many clubs. I mean, there's a ton of clubs that you can play at, but there's only so many where you can really kind of get through to, like, service the crowd, like, because they expect, like, a certain type of thing there. It's fairly strange, but when you have, like, Phoenix is really unique because there's so much space to develop new things from the ground floor and start new scenes and start new followings that are underground or and they can be overground too. It just like Phoenix is kind of unique too. Now it's growing so much. There's a lot of unique sort of more upscale places that still service the experimental, I guess, more art forms.
Now how do you feel, Jorge?
I don't know. I didn't join the band. Well, I joined the band pretty recently, and so I think at that time we were making this new album that's super experimental, and so I kind of hopped on the train when it was already kind of just being weird and cool. So we tour around and we play our weird music, and people like it.
Yeah. People like it. And how do you guys feel like? Okay, so here at home, we'll kind of bring it back there. So here at home, do you feel like you guys get the draw that you want to, like the type of crowd? Like, is it a diverse mix, or is it?
I think an odd thing that's happened is we've been touring so much in the last 4 or 5 years that we're often not associated with Phoenix, which is kind of a weird paradox. Like, we set out to spread kind of the gospel of Phoenix or whatever, because and then you come home and you're not in the scene. I don't know if a scene is a real thing.
It's hard to say, yeah, because you're like, yeah, I know what you're saying.
But you aren't here every day and you're not playing shows here that often, and so you're kind of not really part of Phoenix anymore. When you venture out in the world, so you think you come home to being more attached, and you're very much less attached. We joke a lot, but it's true that we play like Portland or Seattle as often as we play Phoenix, because we just play a couple shows here, record an album, and then go on tour. And so it's kind of it's a weird relationship to leave and feel out of touch, because people ask me when you're on the road, oh, what's Phoenix scene like right now? It's like, well, I don't know. I'm here with you in Baton Rouge. I don't know what's going on in Phoenix. So we kind of set out to be representatives of Phoenix, but then we're maybe the least qualified now that we're out there trying to spread the word. So I don't know.
I know what you're saying, because it's like you're like, we're definitely from here, you know, even if you are moved away, but you still, you know, you're still part of the Phoenix community.
Yeah.
But I just feel like, too, it's kind of, I feel like Phoenix just has so much growing pains. Like, I remember I used to go when I was much younger. Mm-hmm. I used to go out a lot and stuff, and especially a big place that I used to go to shows at was the Modified.
Oh, yeah.
Because I used to host hardcore shows, because I was super into hardcore music back in the day.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of bands came through there, like a lot of amazing bands, yeah, and like local bands and stuff. But I feel like there's not a spot here. Like, there was less venues available, mm-hmm, but at the same time, I feel like it's just, I try to keep up with stuff even just for the podcast, and it's like, it feels like it's impossible, and like,
yeah,
there's all these little corners, but they're not interconnected.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. Yeah. Like, as it's gotten richer, then like the neighborhood you live in is like a different city. When it used to be Phoenix was Phoenix and Tempe was Tempe, and that was like just two distinct things. But now there's like uptown and downtown and south of the tracks, and yeah, it's pretty, I mean, that's kind of a good problem, maybe. I don't know. Everything comes with a price to pay. That's actually what the new record's about, that a lot, the growing pains. I think that's a good word. I didn't use the word growing pains, but that's a good way to say it for sure.
Yeah, because it's like growing's not bad, but there's always positive and negative to everything.
Absolutely. Mm.
So tell us a little about the new singles.
The new single is Sunlight in the Back of Your Head. And that's a lot about, I don't like using the buzzword gentrification, but that's a huge thing going on right now. And it's about what we lost to gain something. It really centered around this little, I used to come down here for First Friday downtown Phoenix here a lot, and it was really dangerous. Maybe perceived danger, but I think it was actually pretty dangerous.
Yeah, like, it was.
You couldn't park too far away, get your car broken into, people. Yeah. Hold you up in the alley, and I just remember getting called names out the window, but it was kind of like worth the danger to see some really cool art.
And that's part of the charm in a sense, a little bit, I guess.
I mean, at the time, we didn't think it was charming to like be accosted on the street.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
But this single is about, now that we're here, you know, fast forward, let's say 10 years from when I'm in this past thinking about this, and I think that the danger's gone away, but I feel like a lot of the art has gotten bad. Like, I hate First Friday now, unfortunately. There's probably lots of good stuff, but it's too busy, too many people selling like what I think of as tacky things, just trying to turn a dollar, not like a self-expression thing anymore. And so I have the line about I name drop Fifth Street over here, and just that the art got worse, but they don't call you, you know, they don't cursing at you out the window anymore. And that's, to me, just like the crux of what's going on in Phoenix right now. Like, it's no more danger, but some of the art has suffered for it, for sure. But with the growing pains, like stuff like this is coming up now. So it's always mixed.
Yeah, that's very true. Like, especially like the big, of course, topic that everyone talks about for gentrification is Roosevelt.
Yeah.
And I see people call it Roro, and I don't get that because I don't ever remember calling it that. Like, I see it referenced, and I'm like, I don't really use that term.
Yeah.
But it's always interesting because when I was younger, I remember hanging down there, mm-hmm. and there was a lot of stuff, and it was like dark and like boarded up, and
yeah,
there was just the Circle K, and you'd mm-hmm. walk to Circle K or whatever. But now when I go down there, I don't even feel like it's the same place at all.
No. Yeah. We go to a lot of cities and we see cities doing it well. But I think ultimately when the growth happens, there is no right way to do it well. It's,
and you can't stop it. Yeah.
Right. And I think the number one problem is the artists built it, and then the people who want money come in and they don't consult the artists. They just think, oh, this is a train that's moving, I'm going to jump on and take over. And I think if somebody could come in and consult all the artists to make it go in the correct direction, like nudge the artists forward rather than push them out of the way and take over. And I think that's what's happening right now. They push them out of the way, and then they're going to take over from here. We got it because it's growing.
Yeah,
we
you guys it built here. It, but we're going to take over, guys.
And
yeah.
then it just looks like knocking down all the old buildings and the tacky apartments. I'm looking forward to when they all don't sell and it's just like the homeless people can take over the nasty apartments and we can have it again with giant skyscrapers.
Yeah, I want to get yelled
free.
At outside the window again. So I know, too, that's a big topic in Seattle right now, right? The venue's the Showbox, is it called?
Yeah. They were going to close it for a high rise, which is happening all throughout the city. It's total garbage. and they're like finding ways to avoid like historic building laws and the Historic Building Society, which is very strange, and just pushing out local businesses. Like, I have a friend who's got like a wedding chapel across the street, and there's a hotel going in, taking up the whole block, and just pushing them out of their lease. But yeah, with the Showbox, I think they got the actual Pike Place Market, which is right across the street. I think is actually extended their arms out to like cover the other side of the street just to try to save it for a few years.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think
that's
it's
cool.
I think there's like an extension. I don't know if it's set in stone yet.
Yeah, I know they're trying to. There's different stuff, and it's just hard with things like that because then just the law comes into play, and there's all these loopholes.
It's
so
wild. It's been around for like, I don't know, 60 or 70 years now. It's pretty old. It's been some amazing shows.
It's
in
a
there.
Landmark, definitely.
Totally a landmark, yeah.
So, for you guys just got done with tour, obviously. So, how's I've never been on tour, so but mm-hmm. I can only imagine it's tiring, right?
Yeah, but
it's my vacation.
Yeah, a lot of hard work goes into it prior to get ready, and so the tour is kind of like the fun part. Is the hard work is the planning, but showing up and playing a show is never hard work. That's always fun, and meeting new people, being in a new city every day. I think we set a new record. We played 15 shows in a row in the middle of the tour, from Jacksonville, Florida, up the East Coast all the way to New York, Vermont, and then back through the Midwest to Kansas City. So 15 days. So we like that means 15 new cities. I mean, we played 30. We were on tour for 32 days or something, but with a couple days off for long drives. But 15 shows in a row, I think that was... I was feeling that.
Mm-hmm. That's an accomplishment. I can't imagine myself even just driving.
Well, a lot of it's downtime too. So, I mean, that's like the being tired thing. It's like a lot of the, you know, all you have really to do is to sleep when you're someone else is driving.
That's exciting.
Yeah. If you don't have service, you can't like look stuff up.
It's kind of fun. It's an adventure. Like, I mean, there's not a whole lot to do. It's easy to sleep in the van, and then just being lazy and groggy can just be exhausting, which is ridiculous. But
that's true.
It's motivating to like learn how to wake up at 9 a.m. Even though you played and we're out till 3 in the morning, wake up at 9 a.m. and drive the van while everyone gets to sleep in for 5 or 6 hours or something.
That was
it's kind of nice. I like it.
Let him do that. I don't want to get up at night.
You're like, that's why it's my vacation. Yeah. I get to sleep.
He gets to get up early.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, well, yeah, like Michael said, we work so hard when we're here. So, I mean, we take like 2 months a year off normally, kind of to tour or more. And so it's really hard to do it at an actual vacation. So we've really learned how to take care of ourselves in a really unique way while we're on the road. Mm-hmm. So I know right now I still haven't even gone back home to Seattle, but I'm not exhausted. Like I'm not going, I want to sleep in my own bed, even though it's been like a week. But just because I think I'm in the mode that I really want to be in.
That's good. That's positive. Cause I know some people say they get like to the end and they're just like, I just want to go home and stuff like that. So that's good that you guys feel positive about that. So did you play the new singles on the road?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how was the reception to it?
They were good. I think that maybe the B side should have been the A side. It's the only thing we were arguing about which one to push more. Like we played it on some radio stations and stuff, but I like them both. I like both songs, but
we had a band cater their set to our single, which was cool. They're like, we're going to play all Sons About Sunlight. And so it was really unique. Like, so I think maybe people paid attention to our single after that. We played right after them. So that was kind of nice.
Midnight Movie. They were called. Nice people.
Yeah, Midnight Movie from Denver.
Yeah, go check them out.
So do you have, when's, because I know you have the two singles, but when's the next record actually come out?
We finished a record before the singles, a full-length record, and for the first time we wanted to shop it around and try to get somebody to pay us. That's a weird concept for us. And so we made these singles so that we could release something in the meantime while we're waiting to do that. So right now we're working with a couple labels to try to release it. So I don't know. It's so slow. I hate it. Like how slow the business side of it is, so stupid and boring. Like it's out. I want everybody to hear it, but
it's a waiting game right now.
I don't want to say like, oh, we have to do something. Like it's ultimately up to us. I mean, this, if you want to release it on a label, you have to, it just takes time. So it's out, it's ready. If you really, really want to hear it, you can come over to my house and hear it. But in the meantime, it's just sitting in digital purgatory waiting to be released. We're already working on a new full-length album right now. So it's really weird for it to be finished and sitting there and nobody's heard it. We played a few of the songs on tour, but the record's very like cohesive and cool, and I want everybody to hear it. It's called Alphabet Superior, but who knows when you'll hear it. Like, it could be a long time.
Well, mm-hmm. I hope we'll hear it soon. If not, maybe we'll go to your house.
Yes,
and
come
listen
over
to it.
Anytime.
Listening party.
So, do you, have you ever, because you have your 7-inch, correct?
Yeah.
So have you released anything else on like a vinyl record before? Like
No, this is the first vinyl record. Everything before this was CD or cassette or digital. So yeah, first time vinyl.
So what made you guys want to press that?
I don't know. I think it's always cool. Like, I like when other people have vinyl, and we wanted one for ourselves. And then I don't really believe you could sell CDs anymore, so I didn't want to do just digital. So something physical, but not a CD. So it was either cassette or vinyl, and vinyl seemed cool.
Like, yeah. Did you get to choose the clear? Like,
yeah, you choose everything. Yeah, clear was weird and.
Like
cool.
It goes with us.
Yeah, sunlight. You could see the sun through
exactly.
It or something.
It was actually the cheapest option, so that worked out.
Hey, I'm not going to hate on that. Yeah. Do any of you collect records by chance?
A little bit.
Yeah, pretty passively, but.
They sell a lot of it, which is sad.
So, let's see. When you guys are out on tour, I know that you had said that a big thing that you guys try to like take care of yourselves. So is there anything that you guys like avoid doing or like Because, or like, no. Is anything you make for yourself? like recipes or anything like that?
A big thing, we cook on the road a lot just to save money. So nothing. Our first couple tours, we ate out a lot. And that was kind of like the fun tours. But this is like the longevity, like if you want to make it. I don't want to get too nerdy about this, but for other bands listening, make your own food on the road so you can have money for rent when you come home.
A lot of fat, make a lot of trans fats. That lasts a long time.
Did you feel better because you were cooked more?
I think as we've done more tours, we've just learned how important it is to, if you want to play a good show, you have to be fed. Yeah. And I think sometimes I come home and my mom is like, you looking skinny, but for the first time in a while, she's like, looks like you guys ate. I don't know if that means she's saying I'm getting fat, or it just means like you look healthy, but it's not like noticeably like wasting away skinny like it used to be. Like we always say we have sleep for dinner.
Is the tour for dinner?
That's tour. But you have yeah.
There's also something charming about cooking on a Coleman grill in a Walmart parking lot on top of a upside down shopping cart.
Nothing charming.
It's pretty
nothing.
Cool.
So what did you, like, what are some things that he would make?
Eggs and potatoes, just cheapest
like
route.
The basics.
Beef and potatoes.
We go fancy and get a vegetable.
Some greens.
Which was a potato. With a potato.
Oh my God.
But I mean, like, $5, you can feed 5 people. So, yeah.
That sounds like some wizardry, like some magic right there.
I mean, like $2 eggs and $3 sack of potatoes.
Does anybody cook for themselves anymore at home?
I do. I have a kid, so we cook.
Yeah.
We cook.
Yeah. It's good. Jeremy, who's not here with us, I mean, he's not dead. He's just not here on the podcast. I guess he could be dead. We don't know where he is. he says he eats better on tour than he does at home. Like, he's the only one who's upgrading on tour while we're all.
He's like, I feel good on tour.
He's the picky one, actually.
Well, he didn't eat beans the first couple tours. Like, he doesn't eat beans.
Like, pinto beans? Okay.
Beans.
I'm Mexican, and I don't eat beans, and it's like a big controversy.
Oh. He doesn't eat any beans.
I don't think it's for like a moral thing. I think he just doesn't like how they taste.
I just don't
he's like
the way they taste.
He's like for bean rights, and he doesn't like to harm. No, he's like the pickiest.
He's not a Pythagorean rice lords, thing. Rice only. They don't eat beans.
So, but he's starting to eat beans. He's starting to eat a couple vegetables. Yeah, he's upgrading on tour while we're all downgrading.
He'll buy SpaghettiOs, and so if he doesn't like what we eat, he'll just drink his SpaghettiOs.
That sounds pretty amazing.
Yeah. It's the way.
Oh my gosh. is there your visuals, you guys have really crazy visuals, which I'm sure you guys get all the time. Yeah. And that's something that you consciously put forth, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I think one of the biggest inspirations is long drives on tour, especially the late night ones when you start to get delirious and weird. Like, I have a lot of things, lyrics and music videos, visuals and stuff that come from just like staring at the road, and then they start to come. I don't know if you saw the music video before Sunlight was In Your Doorstep Bleeding, and that the music video all took place in a van, and it was very much dreamed up while being on tour in a van. So all of my ideas were van related. And I think it's very important to recognize that, like, if you're writing art or making art based on your surroundings, and my surroundings for months at a time is a van, if everything you're putting out is van related, I think you could expand upon that and just make sure you're always in a good setting if you want to make good art. I'm not saying van is a bad setting, but I just think it's important to see the formula of, if you surround yourself with something, like if you lived in a gutter, you might write gutter art. So I think it's something I've mentally noted, that you're in a van, you're going to talk about vans.
That makes sense. Yeah. Totally. It's especially because you're spending so much time in there. It's like, yeah, you're in this box on wheels,
exactly.
Basically.
Yeah.
Think inside the box.
Yeah, he did the opposite. People are always like, think outside. He's like, I thought inside.
But no, that's the point. It's like, make your box what you want your art to be. Like, if you want it to be grandiose, then you need to be in a grandiose box, and that will foster each other.
Mm. That sounds good. Where else do you guys draw inspiration from? Because you guys just, you're, like I said, your visuals, I know they're a really important element. It's like, obviously, you guys are a band, so music, but it's like your visuals. Because I feel like, too, especially nowadays, and I can't really compare you guys to anyone mainstream, obviously, like anyone in like a top 40 setting, mm-hmm. but it's like, at least even maybe like 15-ish years ago, there was some visual element to music still, but that's been lost.
Totally. I try not to pick a genre. I try not to pick a medium to be an outlet. So if you have a good visual idea, I think you should capture it. And if you have a good idea that's a song, then capture that. I tend not to paint or anything like that. But I think if you have good ideas and it's not in the correct medium, or for a band that's a whatever genre and they have a good idea, but it's a country song or something, and they're like, oh, we can't do that because it's not the right genre, I think it's very limiting. So I really try to just listen to whatever's in my head and put it out, often where I don't even know what it means, like just put it out, and then I'll learn what it means later to myself. Other people asking what it means or whatever, I hope that they could tell me, because I don't know what it
You're
means.
You're still learning yourself.
Yeah. It's cool to look at something a year ago and have like an epiphany, like I know what I was talking about a year after you did it. And I think I used to be self-conscious about not knowing what it was about and feeling, self-conscious to not have an answer for somebody to say, what is this about? And it was kind of weird to say, I don't know. But I like that now. I don't know what it's about. Sometimes I have a very concise idea where I'm trying to go with something, but a lot of times, just in your head, put it out, and then you can figure it out later.
Yeah, groove with it. You're like, oh, I'll get it. You're like, this is what I'm vibing with right now, so I'm going to put that out there, and eventually... I'll look into it a little bit deeper sometimes.
Totally.
So what about you guys? What about your inspirations and like things that you're inspired by?
Yeah, one of my other big creative outlets is painting. I like working on like really big canvases, doing acrylics and stuff. And so when a lot of times my creative ideas, visual or musical, they kind of, I think, come hand in hand. Definitely maybe with some level of synesthesia, which is essentially visual understanding of audio. So it's really nice to have a band where we can work with multiple media platforms like music videos and things too. So ideas that come from inspiration from the music most of the time. Like, so even when Michael's writing a lot of the lyrics and things like that, I can still have my own very different interpretation of what's going on, and somehow it still works, you know, because we all have different minds, and I think that's the best thing about a band, is that we all have very just different outlooks on the very same thing, and it works because we're all working towards the same thing. Mm.
I guess I'm not recently I've gotten really into movies, and I guess I don't have too much of a say on the whole visual aspect of what we do, so I guess maybe not yet, but that's something I've gotten really into, and yeah, hopefully someday I can let that out with MB Alexander. But.
So what I noticed too is that you guys get compared to like the same bands, but so you guys get compared to some of like there's like a certain set of bands that I noticed come up a lot that you guys get compared to, but I feel like you guys are in your own lane in a sense.
Absolutely.
So do you think that works for or against you?
I think it's necessary when there's billions of bands, you have to have something like, why would I listen to your band? And I really don't like press or journalism in general for the band. No offense to podcasts and stuff. This is just kind of what I think of as a necessary evil. Like, how do I get somebody to listen to me?
I gotta
go on here, and because otherwise you're just sitting on the internet somewhere. the reason why I don't like it is because I'd rather people just listen to it and have no formulated idea for them about what they're about to experience. I want them just to experience it with no real background. But that's kind of unrealistic for a beginning band. So you have to get out there, talk to people, get in the newspaper. It's ultimately...
It's like an awkward thing in a way, right?
Yeah. It just... like, how can I tell you what the song sounds like? I think you just just listen to it, but that's not realistic. So those kind of little, like, qualifiers or quantifiers, like, they sound like this, is ultimately shouldn't be...
determine whether or not you're going to actually listen.
But that is the reality. So if they can get somewhat close and that might intrigue you to listen to the band... then I'm for it. Like, it has to happen. And I've listened, I read music journalism and I get turned on to bands via somebody suggesting it. And it's kind of, you know, it's kind of like this band you like. It's a tool. It's not the ultimate tool, but that's the only tools we have.
Yeah.
Language in general is limiting like that. So it's just.
I think the best way to think about suggestions like that is to understand that maybe not it's what those bands sound like, but it's what those bands, like, we obviously get compared to bands that maybe existed before us. So it's what those bands did with music in their time, which maybe could be similar to the way that we did it and we're trying to do it now. It's not necessarily, oh yeah, we have a cello on this song and they did a cello on that song. That's crazy. It's definitely good to take for heart, like, oh, if you go, oh, they sound like this band, that band's weird. Like, just to know that they're just not going to be comparable to something that you're expecting. Yeah, I think most of the time they're good suggestions. Like in that respect.
That one guy on tour just said that we sounded like Coldplay, and I thought that was terrible. But
really,
then,
I would have never.
But then he said Coldplay is my favorite band. So then
even
I was,
in a positive.
And like,
aww.
And then I like changed my mind. Like, all right, Coldplay.
You
cool.
saw where he was coming from. He wasn't just like writing it off because I know some people
It's very personal. Like, if you like Coldplay, then that's a compliment. If you hate Coldplay. I was like, that's where I thought he was coming from. Like, you guys sound like Coldplay. And I was like, oh, dang, sorry.
You're
he was like,
no,
Coldplay is my favorite band. Yeah, like, really, oh, so now, because in a backward way, he's saying, you're my favorite band now, right? Is that what he said?
In essence, yeah. He's like, hey, you guys are awesome. Because there's this band that I really love, but I wouldn't say it's like that people don't know about the band. I just think it's not a popular band. The mm-hmm. Deers, I don't know if you ever heard of them. They're like this Canadian... I don't know. They've been around for a minute. But anyways, So the way I always get people to listen to them, they're like, what do they sound like? I'm like, they always get compared to the Smiths, even though they don't sound anything like them. But that's how I get people to listen to them.
I would listen to that. I'll
go listen to the ears, guys.
All right.
I think it's more about who the bands cater to, because I think people have mentioned bands that they say we sound like, and I don't agree with a lot of them. But I think it's just like who those bands cater to. I mean, obviously they're in the same realm, but it's more about the listener,
like the vibe and the feeling. Maybe
vibe,
you're getting off, like, maybe how the person feels when they listen to you, like like you're saying Coldplay. They're like, I'm getting such a positive vibe from you guys, like, it's the vibe I feel when I listen to Coldplay,
right.
So that's why they compared you to them. So that's really interesting, though.
But if he hadn't said they're my favorite band, it would have been a bad day. But
it would have felt like he's trying to slight you.
He's a nice guy.
It's hard.
Jean-Luc.
You talk to a lot of people after shows, and I try to be cordial and listen to everything. You get lots of unsolicited advice, but sometimes it's really good advice. So I always just listen just to see where people are coming from.
The feedback kind of thing.
I remember that girl in Austin after the set, she said, you really don't care about how you sing, do you? That was what she said. And I was like, no, actually, I'm trying really hard. But as we were talking more, she was saying she could feel like my swagger, like that I was just doing my own thing. Like, I didn't care in that way. Like,
you weren't self-conscious?
Like D-gaff, I guess, coming through.
You're doing your thing.
Yeah, but when she said it, like, you really aren't trying at all. But, yeah, it's so that it's everybody's personal taste, I guess. Yes.
Everyone has has something to say. Everyone's yes. a critic in their yeah, own
and that's what you want. I mean, ultimately, I say if they were saying nothing, you know, then you if you're like in the middle or you're like terrible, they're like you're not even worth them giving you a suggestion. If you're if they think you're doing pretty good, but you need this little nudge of a advice, then you must be close enough in their mind, like, oh, this will help them. But somebody who can't even like pick up the guitar in the first place, like they can't get advice because they haven't began. So ultimately, I think it's good that if people feel bold enough to tell you what to do, I think it's good.
Sometimes
that's yeah, you're real getting life journalism, I guess.
You guys are getting some type of reaction because yes. you're saying the worst is nothing, where they're just like, you're not making me feel anything.
Yeah, yawn and go out. And
I
have
guess
a
it's
cigarette.
Good that they listen. Yeah. Exactly. Listen in the first place.
You're so. Making them feel something.
Yes.
So what other, so after, whenever you guys are able to release the album, whenever that comes along,
yeah.
are you going to be touring again? Are you going to tour before that?
I'm not sure. We haven't had any concrete plans about the next tour, except we played this festival in Canada the last 3 years, and then this year's the first year we haven't played it. And it's called Landis Fest. It's way up in Alberta. And they just emailed us and said they missed us this year at the festival. And they're already looking to August. So they let us know the dates. So I think we'll definitely be out in August. It's, you know, that's a year away. But it felt really nice to have somebody thinking about you a year ahead of time. So if nothing else happens, we'll play one festival next year. And we'll play the album, hopefully. Hopefully the album will be out by a year. So but I'm probably two albums will be out by in a year. Jeez.
You're going to be a double like release, oh, double 80. LP.
That'd be cool.
That'd be neat.
Yeah.
Let's see. Is there, I don't know. So do you guys like, what are you actively listening to right now personally?
Ooh.
I know that's like a weird question because I hate when people ask me that because I'm like, I don't know. I listen to a bunch of stuff.
I'm working on the new album. So like I get very incestuous, which is bad.
Whoa. easy chance.
But there's a weird stagnation that is almost like a good stagnation, like you just put the blinders on and do your own thing. I don't even know what I was listening to Les Paul the other day.
Oh, he's good.
Thanks. I have to consult my Spotify.
Hey, there's nothing
to see
wrong
what
with
I I was listening to Dr. Dog this morning because somebody said we sound like Dr. Dog on tour, so I was showing somebody what Dr. Dog sounds like. I was listening to Minor Threat this morning, Santa Gold, because some, you know, when you have a song stuck in your head and you can't find it, but I didn't have a song stuck in my head. I just had the word gold stuck in my head. I was like, there's a girl I used to listen to with gold in her name.
Yeah.
And I've never had that. Santa Gold. I was listening to Ben from Michael Jackson. I had that in my head. I don't know.
I haven't listened to Ben in a minute. It's been
Ben's
a while.
So good.
Ben is good though.
So yeah, I don't know. That's just like one song here and there, but I've just been listening to, we did a bunch of field recordings on tour. We did like a jam session in the woods. Banging on trees and stuff, and so I'm trying to chop that up and make an album or make a song out of it. So that's kind of my listening, because it wasn't typically like where I write something and it's structured, so I do have to actively listen and find good parts and see what everybody's doing, and everybody has their little input of harmonies and weird stuff. So just listening to ourselves, like I said.
I've been on a moody blues kick lately. It's like my dad's favorite band. So as soon as I was back from tour, he's like, you know who you should start listening to again? But it's been good. I like it. And I was listening to Dead Kennedys in the car because I'm driving my mom's sports car around town. And it's just hella fun.
I'm listening to a lot of old folk music, or I guess it's like country before country, or like everything Hank Williams has done. A few Webb Pierce songs, and it's this guy I've gotten into on tour. His name is Lead Belly, from like the 40s. And I think like I've been listening to a bunch of their songs, and I guess what I like to do is sing them And I think what I find is that when you like really sing a song that's not connected, I guess like it's not culturally in context with what we're with now, you're able to like, and you sing it and you can like, you're able to analyze their approaches and you're able to, I guess, analyze a lot of things about the way they sing and the way they perform and what they do when they write songs. And it teaches me a lot when I sing old songs like that. And he's really good. So everyone listen to Lead Belly, really good.
So when you, your song process, do you usually do the lyrics first or last, or is it just whatever that specific song calls for? Like your process like?
Just whatever comes first, and then sometimes I feel like it needs to be expanded upon, and sometimes that's it. And I love modern technology, cell phones and stuff, so I record while I'm driving or whatever, just capture it, and then it could be just like a melody, could be a lyric. I write lyrics down constantly, middle of the night. This could just be like a bass line or
just
whatever.
Just whenever the moment strikes. That makes me think, when I was younger, I used to watch Conan O'Brien and John Tesh was on there. Do you know who John Tesh is?
Yeah, from Entertainment.
Yes, but he like Weekly, was like a musician tonight? Too.
Oh, yeah, the keyboard kind of corny jazz stuff.
Yes,
yeah.
So there was this whole like like underground like following that believed that John Tesh was an alien. And so I'm like, I swear this is leading somewhere. So basically he said that one time he was like just walking and he was like got inspiration. And this was when payphones were still a thing. So he's like, I found a payphone and I went to the payphone and I dialed my my machine so that I can leave myself notes. He's like, and this lady passed by and she was staring at me and she's like, they're like, he is an alien because he's making weird sounds into the phone he's talking to. So you probably get the same thing, people look at you like, oh okay.
Yeah, I was definitely singing in Chicago on the sidewalk, and if I really feel like if I don't capture it, I'll forget, and so like I have to just do it on the street. So I'm just singing weird lyrics into my cell phone and getting looks, but whatever.
Do you ever get people that actually ask you, like, what are you doing? Or you just get strange, like, looks?
Just strange looks, yeah. Or maybe they are artists and they know exactly what I'm doing. But they're just giving me a strange look because they hate what I'm singing. That's a terrible idea.
Maybe they're just like, why haven't I done that? Why haven't I done that?
And actually, I'm using something from the cell phone in the recording recently. It was like, it was just to capture the idea, but I feel like I couldn't do it better than, like, the moment that I made it up. And so I was like, well, just use it. And I was actually shocked, like, it sounds good, the terrible cell phone recording.
What do you use to record? Do you just use like the regular on like a voice note, like recording?
Voice memo. I got just hundreds. I just dumped my phone, like I just got rid of a bunch, but I just like just constantly just recording stuff. So this is like,
you'd be surprised at how I don't know if I want to use the word good, but how good the quality can be with the microphone on your phone.
I think especially for voice things, because it's for voice memos, so Apple knows what they're doing with the filters, and so it captures the voice well in the voice memo.
I think we're just used to it to a certain point.
That's true. Like for sure.
Maybe, I don't know.
That narrow.
Even old microphones are meant to just pick up most of the frequencies that we actually reach with our human voice. So, I mean, we've learned how to expand that frequency range, but what do we actually really listen to? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's totally why it sounds good.
It sounds like the most important parts.
Right, it's just what you need to hear and nothing else. So you're not, the only thing you're missing is stuff you don't want to hear anyway.
It already knows. It's like, I want to pick up
that. Yeah, I mean, like the traffic or whatever. So it's made for doing it. Let's maybe do a whole album on voice memo.
That would be amazing. And you're gonna press it too? You're gonna press it on a 7?
You have to buy a phone.
Buy a cell phone.
You're like, we're selling Apple phones their album.
Steve Jobs would be proud.
He would actually.
Well, you two did that, right? They made us listen to their terrible song.
Yeah, they put one of their albums on there and people were mad.
It'll like come up automatically sometimes still. Like it'll start playing on my phone and it's like a Beach Boys ripoff. Like they're saying Bob or Ann chanting at the beginning and it makes me so mad. Like I listen to 3 seconds of it before I can press pause.
Like, and it plays every time. You're like, I can't get it that fast.
Like, 3 seconds is way too much U2 for me.
Too much for for the new U2. So, I guess, there's anything else you guys wanted to cover? Anything I forgot?
No. We're meeting up with Jason Woodbury this week to get our records in Zia. So hopefully, because the meeting hasn't happened, I don't know, but I think they're going to be at all the Zia locations. So pick up the new record at Zia soon. We'll see how the meeting goes. Maybe he's meeting with me to say, nope.
Oh, don't say that. Be positive. I have
you
good
feelings. You better say it in person. You better line up right now. They're going to sell out really fast. Our lineup right now.
Camping.
Well, when it does, if we'll you guys do get business. Word, let us know so that we can let everybody know, too, that you know they can line up and get the record there. And
cool.
We'll be playing there because we actually have a Mixlr where we play music on. So your 7-inch and stuff, we'll be playing it on there for people so they can listen to it and stuff like that. So you guys can definitely hear, you know, what they're all about. And because they can sit here, like you said, and talk about the record and lyricism and all this other stuff. But you're not going to really know what the band is about until you actually listen to them.
Yes.
So, I think, you know, going out and supporting and actually, you know, buying their album and like, going to watch them, that's really important thing is going to support, because you can sit behind your phone and you can like pictures and all of this stuff, but people are not out there supporting you, you know. How are you going to get feedback, like true feedback? So I guess that's it for last week. I'm tongue-tied. Thank you for showing up. I really appreciate it. I know we had a little setback.
No, it's good.
But I really do appreciate it. Like I said, this is we don't make any money off this. This is just a passion project for us. And really quick before we leave, your Instagram handles and things like that.
You can find us in Kyle's Nasty Crash on tour on skateboard. His head bleeding on Instagram. MB Alexander, EMBY Alexander. It's the same @ for all of them.
Twitter.
Facebook, YouTube, Spotify. MB Alexander. Google it. You'll see more than you'd ever want to.
And you have a band camp as well, correct? Yes. They can listen to your music on.
Yeah. There's a album that I don't talk about a lot, but it's the soundtrack to Chameleon.
Exactly. Really quick before we go. Yeah. So how did that come about? Like, how was the process? Was it different writing for that than actual record?
Yeah, totally. Trevor Riley used to live here. He's a big, big shot in Los Angeles now. He wrote it, he directed it, he had the vision. That's the biggest difference, is that it's his vision for the music, so it's interpreting somebody else's vision through my narrow mind. And I really tried to get behind that, because we definitely fought here and there about this is what he wanted to do and this is what I wanted to do. But ultimately, he's definitely in charge. So doing what he ultimately wants to do is a fun challenge. Like, this is what I would do in the situation, but it's not my movie. So you got to do what he would do in the situation. But it makes me appreciate movies a lot more, really being. I've done other stuff like this, but this is the most real project. Thanks to Brandon Hickey. He helped with the sound, too. He's amazing. But, some really cool nerdy stuff comes out of that, just like how you can control a scene with music. I talked a lot about like a character lying, and the music could say the character's lying. Or I talked a lot about helping sell the lie if somebody's telling you. I don't know, it's
just the things that, like, you kind of absorb that when you watch a movie, but since you're behind the scenes of it now, like, you totally get it. Like, it's like a different point of view, or
I rewind. I'm watching Sharp Objects on HBO right now, Amy Adams, and I rewind that a lot to see exactly what they did at key moments. I rewind over and over to hear that music. I'm just very obsessed with it. So somebody tells a lie on screen, if the music says that they're telling the truth, it, like, the music's lying too, is fun. But sometimes they're telling a lie and the music's like, lets you know, I don't know. It's
speaking to you.
You can give away the trick ending via music, or you could double down on the lie. It's fun. But I'm doing a lot of Moog synthesizer stuff. Wendy Carlos is my number one inspiration, like Clockwork Orange and stuff like that. She's, yeah, listen to that all synth album, very un MB Alexander, but super.
So you feel
MB
like
Alexander.
It deviates from the band a bit.
It does, but it's weird. Like, it really, it's the same thing as moving away or traveling. Like you think you know yourself until you like have to be somebody else. So like I'm a character too in his movie in a way. The music is a character. So when you get to pretend to be somebody else, then you find out who's you and who's a character and how I actually like being that character and maybe I really am this other person.
I think the experience from doing the movie is also affecting the new material that we're working on now, definitely.
All that synth stuff for sure, yeah.
Like do you feel like it's changed your relationship maybe like with how you're creating your art in a way?
Yeah, at the same time I was doing soundtracks for a couple other documentaries and yeah, totally. I mean, I think it's always good. I haven't been studying music like in college for a number of years now, so it kind of reminds me of that, like forcing you to do a project that you wouldn't normally do, and at first you dread it, like I don't want to do that, that's not what I would normally be doing here, but you set out to do it, and then you, if you can really get behind it and you enjoy the challenge of doing something outside of your norm, you find that it's just another tool you can use in the back of your brain there, and you can pull it out when you need to use it. Like,
would you say when you work like on a soundtrack, something that's more like a collaboration like that, mm-hmm. is what you're making even more intentional because like you have a certain goal that you're trying to meet?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, absolutely. Because sometimes when I'm talking about just capturing a raw moment, you're not intending to go somewhere with it. And so there's less intention. It's more inspiration. And this is like inspiration comes secondary to intent. Like this needs to be a sad scene, so what does sad sound like? So it's very intentional, and then you have to be inspired to maybe capture the intent. So yeah, absolutely backward musical process.
And it's kind of weird, I guess, because I get, would you say too, since like you're like I have to create sadness or happiness or whatever it is, mm-hmm. but then at the same time you have to always keep in mind whatever's going on in that particular moment, correct?
Yeah, sometimes I think sometimes you kind of ignore it and just listen to the director. Like I look at the scene for timing, but other than that, like, cause if I think it's a funny scene and he thinks it's a sad scene, like that's what I'm saying. Ultimately he gets the final say of what it should feel like. But the whole idea with emotional story building is what sounds sad to me might not sound sad to somebody else. So you have to kind of be yourself, but also try to know what other people
feel like,
an impossible task, but that's it's a fun challenge. Like but I think there is something collective about, we do have a kind of a shared sadness, especially Western American kind of people. We know what sad is, and you could at the end of the day in the soundtrack you could do something cliche, like do the cliche sad thing, and that is a challenge in itself. Like, do you have that vocabulary to say play this one chord and everybody will be sad? If you are that in tune and good, then you're a good artist, I think, for this kind of project.
And what would you guys, just off the top of your mind, if you can think of anything, I know you said Clockwork Orange, can you think of any soundtracks in your guys' mind that stick out to you that you're like, I really liked that, whether it was like something more classic or something more modern, like soundtracks that you guys really did dig on?
I had a teacher that, like every test that we would take, he would play the Last of the Mohicans soundtrack, which I had never seen up to that point. So it made me go see it, but it's a great movie. But now it's just a very epic soundtrack that now makes me think of learning. Which is kind of weird.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you associate it with your school, not
with
the movie.
School. Yeah. Hmm. And then another one growing up, actually, it's the Kingdom Hearts soundtrack.
Oh yeah,
the original one.
Oh my gosh, yes.
It was amazing. It was I think the first soundtrack I actually went out and bought on a CD. It was like two discs, and there's like 50 songs or something. It was amazing. Mm.
I'm glad you brought up Kingdom Hearts, because I never would have thought I was like video game, but there's so many video game soundtracks that stick out in my head.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Zelda.
What about you?
Well, I was listening to one recently, actually, for Seven Samurai. I forget the composer's name, but he also did another one of Kurosawa's movies called Rashomon. And the difference between the two, I mean, they were, like, so close in time together, but Seven Samurai is, like, super acrobatic and, like, really, the melodies just, like, stick in my head, and then Rashomon's, like, super ominous and chromatic and, I don't know, really cool. I like that composer a lot.
Well, like I said, thank you for coming out. Thank you to Palabras for hosting us. And you can catch all their social media handles. They're pretty much uniform for it. It's just MB Alexander. If you get confused, you can Google it. You can go to the Just Keep Spinning podcast Instagram, because you'll be able to find them on there. And like I said, we appreciate you guys coming out and taking time.
Thank you.
Because, you know, you guys are just giving us your time. And time is expensive. It really is.
Oh,
can't get it back.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And, just, I guess that's it. Just don't stop digging and just keep spinning. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.